Well, yippee-ki-yay, Merry Christmas. Yeah. I love that you guys were into that. That's awesome. Yeah. Super excited to be here this morning. My name is DJ. I'm one of the pastors here, and it is my pleasure to get to talk to you this morning about Die Hard, the only real Christmas movie. Yeah. Maybe. It is a bit controversial, and if you've been around for a while or you know me, you might know that I'm always up for a little controversial debate. And so it is really my pleasure to get to talk to you about this morning. If you didn't know, this week we had an Instagram poll, and some of you might have taken part in that, so we thought we would give you the results this morning if you didn't see what they were. So 63% of you said it is a Christmas movie. Yeah, nice work, you guys. Nice work. 14% said no, and then really, the third one, it tells us the temperature of the room. 23% of you said, who cares? Which you're right, because it's such a good movie. Who cares? It doesn't matter if it's a Christmas movie or not, right? That's what you meant, I think. Yeah. I did want to let you know, some of you have asked about the tree that's out there next to the Welcome Center, and multiples of you have said, why is that tree so ugly every week? It is that way on purpose. It's not that we're bad at decorating around here. That tree is like filled with Easter eggs about the movie of the week. And so you should go look at that tree. And this week there's a treat that you can take off of the tree. There are Twinkies on there. And some of you may not know why there are Twinkies. So you'll have to go watch Die Hard to figure out why the Twinkies matter. The last thing I'm going to make a note of this morning is that we have a special guest who's here. And so just like Jesus, John McLean is hanging out, watching you from the HVA system over there. And he's just letting you know that he is here and he's paying attention to what you're doing this morning. It's like Santa Claus. So, yeah, it's good times, right? It's so cool. I've never thought that I would get the chance to talk about Die Hard in church before, so we're just going to dive into this. So let's see. Show of hands, do you think that Die Hard is a Christmas movie? Let's see what you think. Okay, all right. How many of you say absolutely not, no way? A few of you. And I'm assuming the rest of you are in the who cares category. Yeah, right. How many of you have never seen the movie at all? Wow, a lot of you, and not just the second row over here, which is great. I'm glad you guys, yeah. I'm glad the ampers over here have not seen that movie yet. If you get a chance to see it on TV, you know, you should go for that one. So there's a little less gratuitous violence in it. I will always argue that it's not the Christmas season until Hans Gruber falls off of Nakatomi Plaza, okay? So that's just the way it is. That's just the way it will always be. And it's going to be a classic for many, many years to come. So as I was researching, I looked for other opinions about Die Hard, you know, as you do. You got to figure this out. And not surprisingly, there were a varied opinions. Even Bruce Willis himself announced that it's not a Christmas movie. But I will say, as a caveat, he said it's because it's a Bruce Willis movie. So I think there might have been some shameless self-promotion in that as well. Even Christians have varied opinions about this movie, right? So most of them who wrote about it for sure said, hey, listen, lots of violence, lots of sexualization of women, just you know, all kinds of vulgar content in it. But they also noted that there is this incredible theme of self-sacrifice and of serving others and of the concept of the gospel in the movie, right? So if you haven't seen it, again, I won't suggest that you do. But if you do, you will note that all of these things are included in it. And get this, our Catholic brothers and sisters are a little bit more progressive than we are. I found one Catholic theologian who actually said, literally, it is the only real, true Christmas movie. And there's a whole argument about it. You should look that up. Maybe we'll put that out on social media this week so that you can check it out and decide if they are telling the truth or not. And maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, right? But regardless of whether it's festive or not, Die Hard was in the late 80s, a very important movie. It came out in July of 1988, which definitely tells you that it was intended to be a Christmas movie, July. But it launched the action movie part of Bruce Willis's life. For those of you who aren't old enough, Bruce Willis before that point had only been a comedic actor, right? We don't even think of him in that vein anymore. But if you're a little bit older and you saw Moonlighting, yeah, all right, there you go. We got some pop culture fans here. I love it. That's good. That was Bruce's most famous role up until that point. And so the way we know Bruce now was totally not who he was. In fact, he was like the sixth choice for that movie because they were like, I don't think he can pull this off. Well, little did they know. Also, Alan Rickman, the guy who plays Hans Gruber, that was his very first film role. So Professor Snape might not be in Harry Potter if it hadn't been for Die Hard, right? Yes. So it pits the movie pits John McClane and Hans Gruber. Hans is taking all of these hostages in Nakatomi Plaza, and his whole point is to keep them there long enough so that he can rob the vault, which is going to take him hours to get into, and so that he can keep the police at bay. There are tons of moments of Bruce Willis in his white tank top, barefooted, bleeding, struggling apparel throughout the movie. And it even ends with a surprise gun battle, which is just puts the little Christmas bow on Die Hard as a movie. But here's the thing. So the whole reason that John McClane is in the building and there at all is because he's trying to reconnect with his estranged wife. He's been living in New York. She's been living in L.A. They've moved apart because of her career choices, and his family has gone away. And so he struggles throughout the movie with trying not to let the kidnappers know that it's his wife that's there. And so he tries to remain anonymous for the time. But prior to that, John is really struggling with trying to reconnect with his wife. Like, you can tell that they both want to make that happen. That's the whole reason that he's there. But he can't make it happen. He even openly struggles with this point where he's like, why do I antagonize this situation instead of continuing to work towards a resolution? There's not a lot of compromise going on during the movie. So ultimately, John rescues the hostages. Sorry for the spoiler alert, but 1988, I mean, come on, get over it. And he reconnects with Holly, and they go out of the building together. They climb in the limo, and they ride off into the sunset. And if you only watched the original Die Hard, you might think, oh, what a great story. He rescues the hostages. He rescues his wife. Everything is grand, and they ride off into the sunset. But there were four more movies, and if you've watched any of those, you know that is not how the story goes. Just for your side note, the movies did gross $1.4 billion in all five of the Die Hards. So it definitely was a franchise that America wanted to see. So this morning, my point is to contrast John McClane with another father and husband from history who I think will give us something to see about what is possible when we're willing to make those sacrifices and those compromises and to live a little bit more into what God is asking from us. And so I know you are all dying to know how I'm going to tie Die Hard into Jesus. So we're about to dive into that. If you are new here, we use the YouVersion app, so you can pull that up on your phone. If you go to events, you can find Genesis and follow along with all of that. If you only have an analog Bible, you can turn to Matthew chapter 1, and we're going to start in verse 18. So, yeah, you might recognize that this is the Christmas story, and so that's where we are this morning in this season. Matthew 1:18 says, got it, David? Yes, nice work, dude. This is how Jesus the Messiah was born. His mother Mary was engaged to be married to Joseph, but before the marriage took place, while she was still a virgin, she became pregnant through the power of the Holy Spirit. Joseph, her fiancé, was a good man and did not want to disgrace her publicly, so he decided to break the engagement quietly. As he considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream. Joseph, son of David, the angel said, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child within her was conceived by the Holy Spirit, and she will have a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. All of this occurred to fulfill the Lord's message through his prophet. Look, the virgin will conceive a child. She will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. When Joseph woke up, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded and took Mary as his wife, but he did not have sexual relations with her until her son was born, and Joseph named him Jesus. So I particularly like this one translation of the Bible that says it this way in verses 19 and 20, talking about Joseph. It says, Joseph, chagrined but noble, determined to take care of things quietly so Mary would not be disgraced. While he was trying to figure a way out, he had a dream. I like that phrasing, Joseph, chagrined but noble, right? That's what we think of when we think of our heroes, isn't it? You know, kind of that noble figure who's like, oh, I got to do this thing, right? And so it's easy to think, oh, you know, what a great guy Joseph is. But actually, what an incredible guy Joseph is, right? Joseph is facing this incredibly complex and difficult situation. And even before God comes and speaks to him, he's already looking out for the best interests of Mary and this illegitimate child. He's kind of trying to figure out, what is the thing that I do here? How do I confront this situation that I don't want to be in, but do it with the most respect and love possible for someone that I am confused by? And so then, after hearing from the angel, Joseph decides immediately, okay, let's go, let's make all of this happen. He doesn't wait for something else or some other sign or continue saying, God, well, I think I'm hearing from you, but I'm not sure. Could you just be a little bit more clear? Joseph's just like, okay, this is what you want, God, and this is the way that we're going. How does Joseph do that? I mean, I understand not a lot of us are getting visited by angels in our dreams these days, right? And so I'm sure that was a very unsettling experience and a different thing to do. But he trusts and believes God at his word immediately, and he just moves in that direction. And both Mary and Joseph are the same way. Their responses to God are almost immediate, where they're like, okay, you have spoken, and so I'm going to accept this and move and do what I think it is that you're calling me to do. Neither of their lives are going to be the same moving forward from this moment, right? So I want us to think about it this way, that the presence of God disturbs our comfortable lives. Even in 2024, we can understand that, can't we? I don't know if you've ever had some kind of experience with God where he has shown up unexpectedly in your life. My guess is that because you're here this morning, you probably have in one way or another. That God has done something in you and you're like, oh, I am not going to be the same moving forward from this. And so I was thinking about the word disturb, and what does that mean? And a lot of times I think we think of disturb, and we think, oh, I'm going to be anxious because of this, right? Is anybody else with me on that? You think disturb, I'm disturbed. Or you think of the band, and then you might be disturbed also then. Or you're just ready to rock out like me. It is also just the fact that something in our normal way of life has changed. We've been interrupted from the normal thing that's happening in our lives. And this is for sure Mary and Joseph. They had dreams for how their marriage was going to begin, I'm sure, as all of us do, right? They're already engaged. They already know they're moving in this way. They must have been thinking and considering and wondering how things were going to go. And then suddenly this nuclear bomb gets dropped in the middle of everything. And they're like, well, what do we do now? And it doesn't stop there. I mean, pack up the donkey, move hundreds of miles away to start a family. You know, the dirty shepherds show up after your kid is born and start worshiping him. Then these weird astrologers come by and they're like, oh, he's the king. Let's give you all kinds of crazy gifts that you might not have ever seen before, and we'll worship him again. And then finally, they're chased out of their home country by this vengeful king who says, no, this can't possibly be the way that things are going to go. King Herod says, kill all of them. Kill all the kids. Right? How unsettling. When we talk about being disturbed, how much during this early, you know, year of Jesus' life is this just completely unsettled their lives? Their engagement, their marriage, nothing is as they thought it would be. And when we think about Mary, we need to remember she would have been completely on the margins, just totally vulnerable in all of the social and economic and cultural ways that we can think of, right? And when we think now, you know, teenage pregnancies, they happen, right? All of these things happen. But it was such this stigma back then that it would have been the possibility of destroying her life. And Joseph being willing to welcome her into his home to continue this process of getting married, to making a family, people would have known what happened and they would have been like, are you crazy, man? Yeah, maybe a little bit. But it would have been difficult, right? They would have been completely vulnerable, both of them. But Joseph has more than one dream also. And when Herod gets angry and the wise men walk away and evade him, Herod sends out this edict that all babies two and under, all male babies two and under, need to be killed. And so they hear this, and Joseph has this dream. And the dream tells him again, hey, you need to pack up and you need to move to Egypt. The king of the current king is not too happy about the prospect of another king coming around, right? And we can understand that. I mean, I don't agree, but you can understand why one king would be threatened by the possibility of this next one. But I think this is the point that we see the difference between Joseph and John McClane, right? Joseph chooses to do the extremely difficult things in his life and to do them willingly and to move away and to make the difference. John McClane is in it for the glory to a certain amount, right? I mean, he does the same thing. He gives something up. He sacrifices for the people in his life, but he's only in it for one night. What happens the other 364 days of the year? What happens the next 10 years? What happens as people grow and they move on and they're trying to figure out what their lives are? Well, John McClane is nowhere to be found. Joseph gave up everything in his life for his stepson. Joseph decided to put the priority of living his faith with his family first in his life over anything else. John McClane says, I'm a New York City cop. I can't just pick up and do whatever I want. Joseph says, I'm a follower of you, God, and I will do whatever you ask me to do. See, one of these guys understood what it meant to live real faith. He understood what it meant to love his family, to love God, and to make those hard choices to continue that. Here's what I want us to take home today. Our faith requires courageous sacrifice. I'm going to say that again. Our faith requires courageous sacrifice. Now, I know that some of you are like, yeah, but John McClane is really courageous. You're right. Like I said, both of these guys were incredibly courageous. Both of these guys were very strong. Both of them were living out convictions in their life that mattered and made a difference to people. Don't hear me say that. I fully believe that God calls us to do incredibly courageous maybe dangerous things in our lives. 100%. I'm not telling you that John McClane doesn't have some purpose or that we shouldn't look for opportunities to serve God in those ways. But what I will tell you, as someone who has experienced it, if we are only in it for the one night glory, it's probably not God calling you to that. Because God is calling us to be people who follow him, to live out our faith day in, day out, over and over and over again. Whether it's following to Egypt or rescuing the hostages from Nakatomi Plaza. It's easy to do things that bring us glory. But in Proverbs, God reminds us that this is an everyday thing. Proverbs 3 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will show you which path to take." Leave that up for a second, David. Now, I italicized and highlighted the all you do, but I want to draw your attention to that. In all that you do, God doesn't ask us to just live this faith one night, one time, for a short amount of time. God is saying, listen, it can be every single day, all you do. See, Joseph and Mary eventually moved to Egypt. And think again of how unsettling and disturbing this is. I don't know if any of you have any friends or coworkers or acquaintances who've ever lived a refugee lifestyle. But I have this friend, Simon, who is Sudanese. And it's interesting because we're exactly the same age. He's like a couple months older than me. But when I was trying to figure out how to graduate high school and what to do with the rest of my life, Simon's country went into civil war. And so he eventually had to leave because his village was overrun. And he went to a refugee camp and lived there for a while. And while he was there, the woman that he had been engaged to was in the same camp, and so they lived nearby for a while. Well, eventually Simon got moved here to the United States, and he had no idea what happened to Martha. And so for several years, he lived here, mostly alone. I mean, he had other people who had been in his country, but his family wasn't here. The woman he loved wasn't here, and he was 20 years old, completely unsettled in his life. Now, Simon knew Jesus, which is such a beautiful gift, and he was able to find community through that. But think about how much that would change your life. And then think about Joseph and Mary living this with a young child, with no support, with no family. They're just out there. Think about the courage and the daring that it must have taken for Joseph to live that life. I mean, for sure, he had the memory of the angel saying, listen, you got to do this. But how hard is it to continue to trust God over and over and over again when you're like, this is not the life I thought I was going to live. This is not what I expected for this to be happening early on in my marriage. Hebrews 11 talks about our faith. It says, faith shows the reality of what we hope for. It is the evidence of things we cannot see. Our faith, it's got to be courageous because it's got to sustain us in those times where we have no idea what's going on and we have no idea how we're going to get to the next place. We know that God is for us, right? We say that a lot. But sometimes the circumstances feel like, I don't know how you're going to figure this out, Jesus, if we're honest, right? If we're honest. And maybe you're like me and you're wondering a little bit like, is my faith that strong? And I think that's a beautiful question to ask ourselves. Let's not be afraid to ask that question. Do I have that kind of faith? It's not wrong to ask that question. Even me as a pastor, it's my job to continue to be connecting with God and going like, whew, can I do that? That should be us. This should be us going, that's what I want, God. That's the connection that I want to have with you. That's who I think I'm supposed to be in this life, right? Don't be afraid of the question. Be afraid of not having the question, of not caring whether there's enough faith. Listen, as we grow, I always expected as a teenager that someday I would figure this out, right? Anybody else with me in that? You know, I was fortunate to know Jesus as a young kid, and so I figured someday I'm going to figure out this whole God thing, and I'm going to have it nailed down, right? It kind of seemed like the adults around me, that's what was happening. And it wasn't until I got a little bit beyond that, and then especially into my 20s, where it was like, nah, none of us have this all figured out, right? Can we be honest? None of us are going to have these simple, easy lives that never have any challenges, that we're never pressed on anything, that we never have to figure out this new difficult challenge that's going on in our lives. Our faith is going to change throughout the course of our lives because we are going to have to depend on Jesus in new and different ways all of the time. We're going to have to continually be calling back to say, okay, God, I believed you through all the things that have gone through this, but I'm still not sure how this one is going to work out. 2 Corinthians, Paul reminds us who we are and what we have available. He says, we now have this light shining in our hearts, but we ourselves are like fragile clay jars containing this great treasure. Isn't that a cool picture of who we are and what God is doing? We're like fragile clay jars. And I told our teenagers on Wednesday night, I said, you are God's prized possession. You know, he says that about us. In James, it says, that's who you are. We have this treasure. We are this treasure, but we're a little broken. And we have the possibility to shatter. This makes it clear that our great power is from God, not from ourselves. We are pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. Through suffering, our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies. We got to accept that our wisdom, that our power comes not from us, but it comes from God. It's exactly what we need to take with us. We can make tough, difficult decisions every day of our lives because we know that it's God that is at work in us. Jesus is continuing to be at work in us throughout our lives. These choices that we make, they are all possible because of what God is doing us. Joseph made these choices to care for, to protect, to lead his family because he knew where it was coming from beyond him. It wasn't him. It was God at work in his life. I think this morning we have a couple of different responses that we can make because of what God is doing. The first is this. Some of us have been around for a long time. As I said, I've followed Jesus for a long time. And sometimes we think, I've done all these things. I've learned all this stuff. I've heard all these sermons. And then we get to a certain point where like, I've tried a bunch of things. It's time for me to relax. It's my time to just enjoy the presence of God. Yes, and it's also time for you to understand that fully accepting faith means doing something about it. It means working out that faith as we move forward. We can't fully understand and have faith in God without acting on the things that we know and understand. It's got to be a practice among us. And I would challenge you this way. If you have never spent time with a kid trying to teach them what it's like to have faith, you have never actually lived out your faith in a very impactful way. I know that's bold, okay? But try to explain the concepts of living and walking alongside Jesus to a child. It will change your life as much or more than it would change their lives. And that would be a challenge for me. If you're like, I've never thought about it that way. Listen, if you are a learner and someone who would be willing to take that challenge and say, I need to learn what my faith means to me, go do it. Go join our kids ministry. Be in a classroom and watch kids interact with the God who created them, who sustains them, who's calling them to have a relationship with him. And I dare you not to be changed by those experiences. It's incredible. It's why I do what I do in working with students, because I get to do that same exact thing. Now, it's easy for me to say that, obviously, because I like kids, I like students, right? I have those ways that I would give this up. I would not host, I would not do any of that to spend a year back there just working with kids, right? So my challenges come in different ways, right? I'm gonna confess to you this morning, I am not a cheerful giver, okay? If any of the rest of you are in that vein, all right? I like my money, okay? So we could just be honest here, right? Can't we? That was kind of a nervous little, huh? Right? And so God in this season is working on me to figure that out and to say, okay, how do I engage in things like year-end giving and do it cheerfully? Because I'm a little afraid when it comes to my money. Now, the second way that we might need to react to this morning is some of you are doing all of the things. Some of you, your calendars are full, and you are looking at it and you're like, yep, I do all of that already. I'm serving, I'm doing all the things, I'm working really hard for God. Well, today, you might be invited to stop working so hard for God and to start working a little harder at being with God. You might need to spend some time sitting and listening for who Jesus says you are. You might need to understand deeper this faith idea that God loves you just the way you are, and he just wants to spend a little bit of time with you, interacting with you. Especially if Sunday morning is your main point of contact with Jesus. It might be time to carve out another space in your life to find some time to interact with God. Listen, we might have some questions for God. We might understand that we need to be grateful for this life. But have you ever told him that? Have you ever sat down and said, God, I'm so thankful for the life that you've given me. Help me to figure out where to go next. Or maybe we need wisdom. If you need wisdom, that's great. Ask God for it. But then you're going to have to sit and listen and hear what he has to say about it. Our faith is a gift, right? There are places in the New Testament that tell us that. Our faith is not just our own, it's a gift from God. But our faith requires courageous sacrifice. And in a moment, we have a chance to connect with God this morning. We're gonna take communion together, and Pastor Ryan's gonna come and lead us in that. But in that moment, I just want you to take a few minutes. Be brave enough to ask God, what is it today? Which of those two things is it, God? Is it that I need to take a step and act in courage? Or do I need to slow down and spend some time with you? So do that for a few minutes while you contemplate that. I'm going to pray for us. God, we thank you for the example that Joseph is. We have a lot of examples, God, of people who make courageous sacrifices, but we don't have a lot of examples like Joseph, who lived that over such a long period of time. God, we want to be those kind of people. We want to be the kind of people whose families, whose faith becomes so important that we give up. Give up things that are unexpected, that we never knew would even be possible, because we realize that you were leading us to something that matters so much more than we could have ever even imagined. So God, this morning, I hope that we together would understand that you are leading us to that place, that you are asking us to follow you on this journey. Not because you want to limit us, but because you see so much more potential in us. You see a future for us that we couldn't begin to dream about. God, I pray that we would become those kind of people.